From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 488, The Science of DevOps with guest Nicole Forsgren. Recorded Monday, July 25th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Dr. Nicole Forsgren, who is an IT impacts expert, showing leaders and practitioners how to unlock the potential of technology change in their organizations. Best known for her work with tech professionals and as the lead investigator on the State of DevOps reports, she is the director of organizational performance and analytics at Chef and an academic partner at Clemson University. In a previous life, she was a professor, a sysadmin, and a hardware performance analyst. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
And you're not a doctor, a medical doctor.
No, not that kind of doctor.
You're the PhD type, but actually in technology.
Yes. Yes. My PhD is in management information systems.
Wow.
So.
You're actually a professional. The rest of us.
Well, I mean, it depends, right? So I think sometimes I get a little bit of street cred because as you just mentioned in that lovely intro, I did work in industry for several years,
right?
I was a consultant for a while. I was at IBM for several years. So I did the work, you know, I was getting dirty. I was laying cable. I was doing a bunch of the work on the systems. And then I went and got the PhD because I wanted to be able to really understand how to make systems work. You know, what was it that made software development and delivery work better, faster, predictable way that went beyond one organization or one team? You know, because these stories that we hear are amazing and they're impactful and they're great, but you know, the plural of anecdote isn't data. And so many times we hear, you know, especially from managers or executives, you know, that story's awesome, but that won't work here.
Yes. Well, it's everybody else is a unicorn kind of thing.
Exactly. Or, you know, will that work here? Or are you sure that's going to work here? Or what's going to work here?
Mm-hmm.
So I really wanted to be able to study and understand on a large scale in a generalizable way what works. You know, maybe, you know, starting off what's correlated with high performance and IT performance, but also what's predictive, what is likely to help organizations really drive technology transformation.
Do you think hanging the DevOps moniker on that helps it or hurts it?
Well, so the funny thing is that when I started this, I started back in late 07, the DevOps moniker didn't even exist. So
right.
I was doing this for several years. I think I kind of identified this as something that was really, really important and was trying to convince my committee that this was important before that was even around, studied it for several years. And then that moniker kind of, came around. Although that moniker, you know, it was named in 09.
Yes. That's John Allspaugh's, 10 deploys a day.
Right. And then, you know, Patrick Dubois named it,
mm-hmm.
But I was in the middle of my PhD program. So I actually missed that. And so there were a handful of people that were kind of doing a bunch of this work in parallel. So I missed some of the heavy industry work, although, you know, I was very familiar with it. And I was, you know, a handful of us were doing it in academia, a handful of us were doing it in industry.
Sure. I mean, I just called it a high performing team back during the .com boom. We were making websites that stood up to the demand.
Exactly. And then we really started seeing, you know, this convergence in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013. Then we all started coming together. So does it help? Does it hurt? Maybe a little bit of both. You know, sometimes we hear people say, really, just don't use that word. Just don't use that DevOps word because it's just so loaded and people hate it. But in some ways, it's really helpful because, you know, otherwise it's this really long discussion or convoluted conversation you have to have. Whereas if you say it's DevOps and then you at least have one word or one phrase and everyone sort of understands what it is you're talking about.
And so you are the principal behind the DevOps research and assessment organization, devops-research.com.
Right. So I'm a co-founder and CEO, and that's an organization that I co-founded with Gene Kim and Jez Humble.
Top-tier DevOps operations folks. I've had them both on the show at different times in the past. Gene's a regular. In fact, I think Gene comes on the show every year to talk about your report.
Right. And so DORA really is around. So I shorten it DORA, like you mentioned, DevOps Research and Assessment. And so that organization is there really to help us understand what makes high-performing IT teams and high-performing IT organizations, and then share that knowledge broadly. And so that's the organization that we use to, you know, conduct that research for things like the State of DevOps report, and then, you know, share that knowledge and spread that broadly through an assessment and benchmarking tool that we're now launching and has been in pilot and beta with a few teams now, and it's really exciting to be able to kind of share that more broadly, or at least apply it a little in more targeted ways.
And I got to tell you, as someone who's read the State of DevOps reports over many years, it's definitely the report itself has evolved. I think you ask more complex questions these days.
Right. And that's really kind of the way research works, right? Is you kind of take an iterative, evolutionary approach to it. So I was first involved 3 years ago, I want to say the 2014 report. And that was the year that we defined from a really solid kind of statistical way what IT performance is, and that's throughput instability.
Interesting.
And we found we have some good evidence statistically that those are valid, reliable measures. And we found a predictive relationship between IT performance and organizational performance, where org performance is profitability, productivity, and market share. And that was, you know, fantastic. That was really, really exciting because that year.
That's huge. I mean, that's transformative because a lot of IT organizations are solely focused on stability. Uptime is all that matters. Give me my five nines and I've done my job. Give me my bonus. I'm out of here.
Right. Or, you know, we had been told, or if not told directly, it had been strongly implied that if you go too fast, if you have too much speed, that you won't have stability, or that you have to have these trade-offs. And that, you know, if you want to speed things up, it's going to cost you. And we just don't see it. We don't see it anywhere in the data.
Interesting. So no correlation between speed and instability.
No. So the highest performers get both.
Interesting.
The highest performers always get both. The lowest performers see neither. If I see trade-offs, which I really don't, but if I see them, we see them in that middle tier group. And which is sort of suggesting that if you're trying to tamper down and see trade-offs in that speed, you're also costing yourself some stability. Mm-hmm. So we also started that year investigating some of the things that correlate with and starting to look at some of the predictors of IT performance as well. Some of the technical practices, some of the managerial practices. We started taking a look at culture, that Westrum organizational culture measure that we always talk about. Mm-hmm. We move on to 2015. 2015 was the year that we, again, revalidate that IT performance measure. We revalidate the predictive relationship between IT performance and org performance. And then we really dig into technical practices. And we take a look at continuous delivery and what makes up continuous delivery. And we find things like test automation, deployment automation, all the things in version control, not just your application, but also your system configuration, all of the things in version control. And then we take a look at some of the things like lean management practices. What goes in there? It's things like using WIP limits, work in process limits.
Right. The Kanban approach of creating visual representations of bottlenecks.
Yep. So again, visualizing your work, monitoring work to make business decisions. Mm-hmm. And the key there was also to make business decisions, right? Not just monitoring to wake you up in the middle of the night when something breaks.
What? Actions based on data? That's just crazy talk.
Crazy talk. And then also that Westrum cultural measure again, right? So we're seeing good validation of CAMS, right?
Yeah.
CAMS has been around and everyone said, oh, this is nice. But again, it's good to see, so as a data person, right, as a good researcher, I want to see evidence of this. Evidence that this is supporting and predictive of what we've seen before. So then we move on to 2016. In 2016, we extend this definition of continuous delivery and we add a few components. These components include test data. So having test data as a good piece of your technical practice, trunk-based development, which, you know, of course made Jez happy in continuous delivery.
I was calling it to my teams integrate first mentality.
Right, exactly.
You're always working from the trunk, so your code, even though it's not visible to the customer, is always being deployed so that the integration is not something that happens at the end.
Right, and so many people have said, you know, so many times they come to us and they say, but are you sure this is going to work for me? I'm sure this isn't going to work for my team. I'm sure this only works for small teams. And so many times Jez kept having to say, no, we see this everywhere. Google works from a monorepo.
Wow.
You know, they have two branches, and one of those branches is like Chrome, right? Which is basically an entire product. You know, I think the other one is their phone, right? So majorly complex, you know, the rest of Google works off of trunk.
Right.
Google works on trunk.
That's really interesting to think about.
So everyone should be able to work off of trunk.
Yeah, well, certainly if your concern is size, there are much bigger than you that are making this happen.
Exactly.
It just sort of speaks to the issue isn't size.
Right. And nor is the issue complexity, right?
Right.
And the other thing that we added was security, right? Because so many times we see pen testing happening at the end. But the concern was if you move pen testing to the front, won't that just slow everything down? And if we say that IT performance is speed and stability, then moving security to the front, if it slows things down, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, we found that moving security to the front, if you do it the right way, absolutely contributes to speed. And the report has some really great guidance on how to do, how to integrate security up front. And it's things like including InfoSec in the design process,
right,
having pre-approved libraries and testing libraries for that. So that was really good.
Well, just this mentality of not forcing InfoSec to start over every time you'd have a new build.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Sort of a byproduct of we're going this fast, there's no way this won't be a blocker. We must provide better data to InfoSec in the first place.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, and you know, the way it's done right now is you have pen testing at the end.
Right.
Find, you know, 32 errors, mm-hmm, and you can only fix two of them because it's the day before you go live.
Right.
So it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah. There's no way to win in that scenario.
Exactly.
You're always going to run into that.
Right. So that was the technical piece. On the management piece, we actually went further upstream to take a look at things like customer, you know, mm-hmm, asking the customer, soliciting feedback from the customer, broadcasting it to the teams and integrating that feedback, and then decomposing work into small pieces so that you can actually get that single piece flow and making that visible through the entire value stream. Those are also predictive of IT performance.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that just sort of shows up. And earlier this year, we talked to Gene and he was talking about InfoSec and management specifically. It's just like the dev guys and the ops guys get this. Testing is essential to all of it. So those guys, they've been having pizza together for a couple of years now.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's recognizing that everybody's involved.
Right. So it was, you know, stretching further up to kind of that fuzzy front end, reaching all the way down the line through ops and showing that making this visible to everyone speeds up the whole process. And the thing that I really loved about this, so we also, you know, we always include that culture piece, right? Mm-hmm. So we included the Westrum measure again, which again was predictive, but we also included another measure called identity, and it's how you identify with the work and how important that is. And here's the thing. Once you find it or when you talk about it, of course it seems obvious and interesting, but finding evidence for it is also great. And when we think about it, when you work in an organization that does really, really cool technical work,
sure,
you want to work there, right? Because it's super awesome and it's super cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you can see how your work relates to what the customer wants, and you can see that work and how my piece of code relates to the whole product, I feel like what I'm doing is important instead of just like I write code and I don't exactly know what it does.
Yeah, that COG model of I'm going to feed you a set of requirements. You're going to manifest as code, pass it to QA, and that's the end of it.
And it's the thing, right? So both the technical practices and the lean management practices are both predictive of identity. And identity in turn feeds into overall organizational performance. So it creates this virtual circle where if I'm doing amazing work and I know how my amazing work fits into what my company does and what my customer wants, I'm going to do better work in turn and I'm going to make my company money. It ends up being highly correlated with employee net promoter score, mm-hmm, which means I'm going to tell other people this is a great place to work. And other research that was done in Harvard Business Review has shown that ENPS, that employee net promoter score, is also predictive of revenues. So you're creating, by creating this amazing, so I'm going to use one word, you know, DevOps environment,
right.
by doing the DevOps, right? We're creating this environment where you're creating good work, you're creating good code, and you're doing it faster. And you're creating an environment where everyone wants to work, they're doing better work, and they're telling everyone else that it's a great place to work and be, and you're making your company money.
Yeah, it's really interesting that a lot of folks resist putting business metrics in front of, quote, non-business people. But when you do, they now kind of know what to work on, what's important, and where their value actually lies.
Right, exactly.
My favorite story in that space was JFK during the space race, talking to a janitor at NASA and saying, what do you do here? And he said, I'm sending men to the moon, sir.
Exactly. A Velocity talk from a few years ago, and Andrew Clay Schaefer told something pretty similar. He said, you know, there are different types of stone cutters. You know, there are the stone cutters who say, you know, you ask them and you say, what do you do? And they say, well, I cut stones. And there are some of them that say, I build cathedrals.
Right.
It's the same kind of a thing.
It's absolutely the same kind of thing. Nicole, give me 1 second to pay the bills here because Run As Radio is brought to you by UpGuard. In the aftermath of data breaches, the public is often told we just couldn't have seen it coming. But in a lot of cases, that's just not true. Over 80% of breaches have their root in misconfiguration, whether it be a firewall rule, server setting, open port, or third-party service. UpGuard is the premier system of record for IT configurations, no matter the platform, pinpointing anomalies and surfacing unauthorized changes in critical systems around the world. See how it works and get a live, customized demo at upguard.com/runasradio. You know, I spent some time with the State of DevOps Report 2016, and not to call out specific page numbers, but page 15.
Okay.
Well, what was interesting about it is you talked about high performers, medium performers, low performers. And the low performers had a certain deployment rate of, you know, between a month and 6 months and change times a month to 6 months. And their failure rate was 15 to 30%. And when they moved up to medium performers, so that their chain rate was maybe once a week to once a month, their failure rate increased 30 to 45%. And it wasn't until they got to the high performer stage with multiple deploys a day and rapid response to changes that their failure rates dropped dramatically. So it's almost like there's a hump to get over.
Right. And we see that in actually a few different cases. So we see it in terms of their IT performance.
Mm-hmm.
We also see it in other areas like rework, where, you know, sometimes you have to do the hard work of getting from low to high performance. Because, so like, let's tell this story, right? So I'm crafting this story, right? It's fictional, but so many people have been here, right?
Right.
So you think about being a low performer. So when you're this low performer, you're not delivering code very quickly. You're delivering code a couple times a year, right? A few times a year. You're not super stable, but you're not too slow because quite honestly, like slow is the new down, right?
Right.
Like there's no such thing as like a down website or down anything.
No.
But you're delivering code like 2-3 times a year. Your code isn't like super stable. It's reasonable. But then what that means is that you are prioritizing features.
Right.
All you're doing is kicking out new code and new features.
Well, if it's going to take 6 months for a new feature to get out there, everybody wants their feature in.
Right. I mean, it might take 3 months, it might take 4 months, but like you're not doing a lot of rework or refactoring. You're not dealing with technical debt. You're ignoring technical debt in favor of new work. You might not even be doing a lot of coding for automated tests because the business, right? I'm using my scare quotes right now. The business is telling you that we just need to get stuff out the door.
Right.
Once you finally have things sort of under control and you've moved from low performer, which is between 1 month and 6 months to really get that code out the door, into between 1 week and one month. So let's say you can get code out the door right about once a month. You finally start to look around you and you realize that like you have this environment where everything is duct taped together. And you're like, okay, we're on a reasonable cadence, but I have to start cleaning stuff up.
Right.
I have to deal with my tech debt. I have to get some automated tests in place because I have been doing way too much of it manually. I have been burning myself out. My teams have been burning themselves out. So in order to get from low through this medium performance area into high performer, I have to dig myself out of this glorious mess that I have created.
Interesting.
Now I'm in a viable business, right?
Yep.
But I've created something
that runs with risk. So you're saying that that increase in failure rate at the medium level is the cost of paying back that debt and what breaking things that used to work?
Very likely, mm-hmm. because we also see this, and I'm trying to find the page that's on now, but we see an increase in rework as well. So high, medium, and low performers, we see more rework in medium performers than we do even in low performers.
Interesting. Because that is the repayment of the debt.
Right. And it's very likely because low performers are just ignoring it.
Right.
They're just kicking out new code. They're just ignoring rework. They're ignoring technical debt.
But they're not, they're not doing that much. They're just incurring more technical debt. They're not building as many new features as the high performers are. I'm looking at other elements of your report there. But the fact that you just... If you're going to get good, you're going to have to pay for this stuff.
Right. But they've gotten themselves to a really good cadence, right? Their throughput's better than low performers.
Yep.
Right? So they have a better pipeline. They have a decent pipeline. Now they're getting themselves to a point where, like, they can function better.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to build up their automated tests, which is not necessarily new features, right? But it's better. They're getting themselves to a better point. But they have to pay back a little bit, right? You got to pay the piper.
Sure. But I can also see where... And there it is on 44 is that point where it's like, all right, 11% rework for high performers, 22% rework for excess rework of medium performers, 17 on the low.
Yep.
You can also see where people would push towards medium and that impact is enough to send them back to low.
Right. And this is where so many times we say, like, trust us, this is worth it. Mm-hmm. It's just a little bit. You're just doing a little bit of work. You'll get there.
Yeah, you have to get through this.
You know, and I know Damon Edwards gives these amazing talks where he talks about the J, right? You need to do little J's. Do a little J, but like if you've put off this work for so long, it's going to feel like a big J.
Right. Well, J curves are famous in like geopolitics and so forth as well. You know, there's a certain amount of stability that comes from a dictatorship. But in order to get to a democracy, you kind of have to go down to the bottom of the J to come back up.
Yep.
And it feels like it's interesting to think because you want to think low, medium, high is just a line up, but it's not. You kind of have to go down to come back up.
And there are only certain things that go down, right? Like mm-hmm. I really want to point out, like by getting to a medium performance area, you are deploying code faster and more reliably.
Right.
You've just got that little bit of the technical debt and the rework that you have to dig through.
Interesting.
So some things feel harder. But overall, you're in a better place. Like, don't give that up, right?
Well, the funny thing is the people that are going to be impacted the most in that medium challenge are your most senior resources.
Yeah, likely.
And they're the ones with the say. Like, that, what's going to send you back is the senior guy saying, I'm unhappy.
Yep, unless they're also the ones that...
Want to be better.
That understand. Yep, yeah. That want to be better, that have the vision, that understand, you know, this is where we're going, and that can coach some of these junior people through it also and say, listen... Let's keep building our automated tests. Let's keep doing some TDD. This is going to make things better. Trust me, it's worth the investment because this is an investment.
Yeah, it's a very interesting challenge. And this is not just about development. This is operations folks also being able to measure the quality of software in real time, being able to give, you know, who detects the failures? It's the guys on the line that are running the software.
Yep.
So it's very interesting to see the challenge. I think it's one of the overarching messages in the 2016 document is this, you have to get through this hump. You're going to spend more money, you're going to spend more resources to get to another side of the high performer that makes such an impact.
Or maybe just reallocate those resources, right?
Right.
It may not even be spending more. It's just maybe a reallocation.
You're going to ship fewer features for a while.
Yep.
You may actually do those features more quickly. But you've got folks fixing, you know, you can't really call it a new feature if you're reworking an existing one.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to do those things in order to give yourself a platform to keep going forward on.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, some things you may be doing faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're rolling out different automation, it's just going to be a reallocation of time and resources.
I get it. Yeah. It's interesting to see how this report has evolved. It's a little less pure sunshine. It's like this doesn't come for free. But when you get there, the difference is massive.
Oh, absolutely. And now we're really to an interesting point where now people can come through and you can take a look at the report. And now you can start to tease out, or organizations are needing to start to tease out, you know, where do we start now? You know, where am I going to prioritize resources? Mm-hmm. You know, there are 20, 25 areas in terms of culture, metrics and monitoring, technical practices, managerial practices. Where do we start? What do we need to do? What do we know are important?
Right.
In terms of driving IT performance and organizational performance.
I guess I wonder how much the organization, at least the teams involved in this, how they think differently, how much feedback they have in that process, having gone through it.
The teams themselves,
yeah,
or the organization? So
the teams themselves.
So each team is often going to be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But we're definitely feeling a lot, seeing a lot more pressure being felt at the organizational level. You know, the game is very different now than it was 5 or 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, CIOs are often, you know, in place 2 to 3 years.
Right.
So they need to be able to step in, understand their environment, be able to assess their environment very quickly within, you know, 6 months of stepping into office, and then be able to have an action plan and understand where the technology is, understand what they want the technology transformation to look like, and know where they're going to be moving and what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, 3 years is not a lot of time, you know, when you talk about changing organizations. So
right, especially when we know that tech transformations can take 2 to 3 years.
Sure.
So being able to step in and assess quickly is really, really important.
Yeah, this always seems to come back to instrumentation, doesn't it? Like, how are we measuring how we're being productive?
Right.
What do we really know about our organization and what we actually do? Because so many organizations I run into, they literally don't know. All data is anecdotal for them.
Well, and how can you do it in a systematic way,
mm-hmm,
that hopefully has some kind of, well, so systematic, so that it's, the measurement is somewhat similar across different teams, and in ways that remove some kind of bias, right? Because you never know who, you know, each leader is going to have some surprises. You know, each leadership team will have some of their own surprises. And then how can you, you know, really help each team maximize what they do?
Right.
Because again, you know, teams deliver software. Your teams are really going to be what help you maximize and optimize that transformation. And so really being able to leverage what you have within your organization is the key. And this is going to be like a side rant really quick. But everyone always says, you know, hiring is really hard right now, and we have such a talent shortage.
Right.
Not particularly. You have, so many companies have amazing people in their organizations right now. So it really just comes down to understanding which key capabilities are the ones to focus in on to get the biggest bang out of your buck. Focus in on, you know, making your organization a learning organization, helping to empower your people, focus in on, so understanding that it's part technology, part process, part culture.
Sure.
You can hire a handful of people, but quite honestly, you know, the NUMMI story. Are you familiar with the NUMMI?
Please tell it.
Okay, so I'm going to have to, I'm trying to remember what it stood for, but I think it was the new United Motor Manufacturing plant. It was,
oh, yeah,
it was the joint venture between GM and Toyota. So GM had this plant that was in Fremont, California, and the people that were working in the plant, just, they were not particularly effective. They were not happy.
Right.
They were sabotaging the cars, right? The culture was one in which, like, cars were being sabotaged. They would put Coke bottles in the doors so that as you close the doors, it would rattle. Like, it wasn't good, right? Not good. TM. And then, so the plant closed. And then Toyota wanted to be able to come into the U.S. market and manufacture cars in the U.S. for various tax reasons. And so they decided to open up at the Fremont plant. And somehow, right, they decided to, so they did a joint venture with GM and opened up at that same Fremont plant, and somehow ended up hiring back the majority of those exact same workers.
Wow.
Right. So what they did is they actually shipped many of those workers over to Toyota City, taught them the Toyota way, which is quite honestly like some process, but very, very much culture.
Mm-hmm.
Shipped them back, and within months they were rolling cars out at the same speed and the same very low defect rate as Toyota cars. They were basically like matching Toyota's speed and defect rate, which tells you that it's not the people, it's the system in which the people work.
Right. Well, you know, good people can make a bad system work, but not well. But a good system can take on all kinds of people and be successful.
Exactly. Absolutely. And the funny thing, or the interesting thing, several years later, that plant ended up closing. Oh, and so as an aside, they tried to roll that system out to all the rest of the GM plants, but they couldn't replicate the culture because the managers at other plants just, like, they didn't understand what that culture was.
Right.
They were trying to just replicate the process without the culture, which is why we say it's technology and process and culture. You can't just take a process and replicate it without culture.
No.
That plant ended up closing, and now that is the site of Tesla Motors.
Right. Yes. So, which is interesting. I don't know if the building is contagious in some way, but so far so good for Tesla.
Yeah, Tesla is now going strong.
Yeah, so far so good.
Yeah, so take the people that you have, make it a good culture and a good climate, and you can make amazing things happen.
But I also wonder, when you start applying this culture inside of your development and operations process, have you also applied it to HR? Because in my mind, when we have this culture of innovation, it's got less to do with what skills you've got and more your ability to learn and to embrace new ways and evolve.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, I think I would go at HR and just say, like, are we still hiring purely on years in a skill? Or are we actually starting to look at hiring the same way we're looking at building our products?
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be a stumbling block. Nicola, half hour's disappeared. I don't know how those things happen, but it's happened again. Where can we see you? What's your plan for the rest of the year?
Gosh. So plans for the rest of the year. I tend to pop up at a few conferences.
Mm-hmm.
I will be at Agile Singapore. I'll be at Surge. I think I'll be at Lisa. So I'll be around. You can always catch me on Twitter at Nicole FV, and my website is NicoleFV.com. And I'm always around. So I would love, if anyone ever catches me at a conference, please come catch me and say hello.
Awesome. Nicole Forsgren, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.